all week long on Grant and Danny right here at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz. We're going to be giving away tickets to see Adam Sandler. These are awesome tickets. Congratulations. You're winning a pair right now if you're caller 10 at 800-636-1067. It's the You're My Best Friend Tour, Saturday, September 27th at Capital One Arena. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events.
What are you doing to protect your family's assets? As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condor and Morad can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Beltway Blitz today. We've got the Capitals draft this weekend and free agency tomorrow. The NFL blockbuster deal between the Steelers and the Dolphins today and an update on Terry McLaurin and the Nationals. All coming up right here on the Blitz. Let's get it popping. To discuss the Caps with us, let's start with Ethan Cadeau of Monumental Sports Network. Ethan, what do we need to know about the Caps draft class?
I really like it. Lyndon Lakovich, the first-round pick they got at 27. You could hear on the broadcast, Chris Patrick was like, we were sweating out the last few picks. We didn't know if we were going to make it there. He's a home-run pick there, someone they thought would probably go in the teens, early 20s. 6'3", big size on the wing, has a really good shot. He's really excited to be about, and the rest, the other four, all are solid additions. Ross Mahoney said size is key. I think all of their picks were 6'3" or taller. So, I mean, you know how the NHL draft goes. They're all 18. We probably won't see a bunch of these guys for 3 to 4, 5 years. But for a five-man class, there's a lot to be excited about.
What's the timetable for some of these guys and maybe some of their more recent draft picks? Because it sounds like there may not be that many paths to the show here for a lot of their young pieces.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell. Guys like Ivan Miroshnichenko, Chris Patrick was pretty open and honest. Like, he's going to have a chance to make the team, 2022 first-round pick. A guy like Lakovich, I don't think he's going to be in the show for 2 to 3 years at the minimum. Hendrix LaPierre, another first-round pick. We've seen him up for a little bit, spent most of the year in the AHL. He's another guy that could make the roster. But like you said, there really aren't that many holes and openings for these young guys, so they're really going to have to shine in training camp or even dev camp this upcoming week to really push for a spot come the fall.
Speaking of holes and openings, the offseason is underway. They've already made a trade, but player movement's really getting going tomorrow. The cap goes up $7 million. There should be money to spend all over the NHL. And while the Caps aren't in the best team cap position, they've got more flexibility than they've had for the most part over the last several years. What are you anticipating? What makes sense to you as a blueprint here in the next 72 hours of trying to land a few pieces?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot quieter than last summer, which is honestly pretty obvious after they acquired 7 new players in the span of, what, a week last year. If they're going to swing big, I mean, I don't think they're going to be on Mitch Marner. Nikolaj Ehlers is another guy I probably think will be a little too expensive for them. I think they could try and swing something in the trade market. Maybe Brock Boeser from Vancouver could be an option, but I think we're going to see a lot more of like fill in the gap, stopgap type players like we saw with Taylor Radish and Brandon Duhaime last year. Like you said, they have some money, but they still have 4 UFAs, Anthony Beauvillier being one that I feel like they'd like to bring back. So I could see them using that money, spreading it out on like 4 or 5 players rather than going for a couple of the big fish that are out there.
Do you think Beauvillier comes back?
That's tough. I would like to think so. Of the 4 UFAs, he would be the one I personally would try to keep the hardest. But, I mean, we're kind of running up against the clock here. If it gets to tomorrow and he's not signed, I'm sure he's going to see what else is out there.
It also just feels like, and I'm guessing, but he had such a good postseason. Like, that normally lends to guys getting overpaid. I'll bet you he's got a pretty sizable market right now that maybe, you know, right before the start of game one of round one, they didn't want to pay him.
Definitely. And we saw throughout the playoffs, he can play on your first line, he can play on your fourth line. I think that lineup versatility is something that really holds in his advantage. And how many UFAs can go and say, I played with Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin in the same season and was productive on both of their lines? So I'm sure he'll definitely be in line for a raise, no matter if it's here or if it's somewhere else.
Ethan, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
You as well.
We'll see you, buddy. Hit that NFL sounder, please. Our pal Nate Davis, USA Today, to talk about the National Football League. Pittsburgh, Miami, a little deal is swung. Jalen Ramsey, a new spot. What do you make of the deal, first of all, Nate? And kind of walk us through what you think the Steelers' plan is this year.
Yeah, I mean, pretty big deal for June 30th. You don't see the three-player deal very often, Danny. But, you know, it says to me that the Steelers are kind of, you know, a team that hasn't been that aggressive in the trade market or the draft market for so many years. And, you know, I still don't know that this changes their outlook hugely, but maybe they're a little more of a threat to knock off a Kansas City or a Buffalo or a Baltimore, you know, in some round of the playoffs. It's an interesting one. And I think maybe they're a little bit of a tough route. I'm not ready to put them, you know, on the Super Bowl short list. But interesting. And then also just, you know, the Dolphins, you know, for a team that Stephen Ross, their owner, said, kind of gave the dread vote of confidence to Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer after an 8-9 season. I don't see how this really makes them any better. Be interested to see what way they go as well.
So, to drill down a little more on your Steelers thoughts, it sounds like you like them a lot more than you did a few weeks ago. I've kind of been curious about this last month. I mean, react to this. My take has been they can't win a Super Bowl. They're not on the level of the elite teams in the conference, and they're basically just confirming that they're going to have a really, really hard time getting their quarterback in the future next year. All of this is an exercise in futility. It sounds like you think that's too far.
Well, you know, Grant, I think I've been talking for weeks about you know, they're kind of in that one-and-done playoff zone, and that could still be the case. You know, I don't know what their plan is for next year. The draft is going to be in Pittsburgh. TJ Watt is not taken care of. You know, I don't know if they have some, you know, big master plan to get their quarterback as a long-term future next year when it appears there's going to be a lot more kind of franchise-caliber quarterbacks in the draft than there was this year, and they have accrued a little bit of draft capital for next year. I mean, they're not sitting pretty like the Rams are, for instance, and or Cleveland. But you know, I mean, clearly this is a year. If you sign Aaron Rodgers, you may as well try to go for it. And I don't feel like they gave up a whole lot. I would say that Jonnu Smith and Jalen Ramsey are the two better players in the deal way Micah Fitzpatrick has gone in the last few years, and that pick swap in 2027, how that goes for that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't think they've given up much. I think they're better. How it relates to their long term future, you know, we'll see down the line. But I mean, I do also think this is indicative that I wouldn't be surprised to see this organization be a lot more aggressive in the draft next year to maybe fix that one problem that's been dogging them forever. And this kind of shows that they're willing to take bigger swings.
Yeah, apologies. It seems like we're about to do Steelers radio here for a minute. But TJ Watt, Pittsburgh Steelers, you expect the deal to get done there, right?
Yeah, I think it gets – I mean, for sure. I mean, that's also such a fluid market. And, I mean, does TJ Watt, you know, want to sign on the dotted line now? I mean, is he hoping to see where Micah Parsons lands, maybe where Trey Hendrickson lands? You know, we know where Myles Garrett, you know, has kind of set that market at the $40 million range. You know, he's younger than TJ Watt. Whether or not he's better, you know, you can split hairs there, but he is still younger. So I don't know if he's going to be holding out to get paid more than Myles Garrett or whoever the next guy is. Not sure the pass rusher market will work quite the way the quarterback market, where the next guy up usually gets the raise, but I think it'll get done. And I'm actually not sure that TJ Watt needs every last penny, but I mean, he certainly, needs to get up kind of a bump because he's fallen a little too low in that market relative to what he means to this team, which is probably the face of the franchise in many ways.
Albert Breer and Adam Schefter both had reports over the last day or two that Terry McLaurin and the Commanders are nowhere close on their negotiation. How do you think that plays out?
I think that has to get done. I mean, I think the Commanders know that. I mean, not only is Terry a productive receiver, and then certainly that was much more evident last year when he was a guy that got into the end zone much more often than he ever has before. And that's, you know, that's a function of playing with a top tier quarterback. But I think his influence in the building, the kind of leader he is, the kind of tone that he set really from day one when he got here, when we thought that the Commanders were getting a really good special teams player and maybe a guy that would contribute on offense as a second or third receiver. I think that'll get done. It's just kind of a, you know, we're in the summertime. There's no urgency at this minute. But I would think Terry McLaurin will get what's coming to him before training camp starts or shortly thereafter.
Did the Colts miss their window to be competitive in a pretty mediocre AFC South?
I I mean, they could still be competitive. I think Danny, and I think frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if Daniel Jones gets rehabs to a certain extent under Shane Steichen, and maybe is a better fit in the short term than Anthony Richardson, who I think, you know, he needs the reps, but he needs to get healthy. And I think Anthony Richardson could use more time, percolating and learning, given how much inexperience he really has as a starting quarterback, both in college and at the high school level, frankly. So, I mean, that's a team that I wouldn't be surprised to get to nine or 10 wins if certain things fell into place. I think a defense could be better under Lou Anarumo this year. They've got interesting pieces with Jonathan Taylor and some other guys on that offense. But I mean, hey, you know, they haven't won a playoff game since Andrew Luck was there, and they've been trying to figure out this quarterback problem forever. And it still seems like we're not sure if it's really going to get fixed.
Nate, thank you as always.
Okay, happy fourth, guys.
See you, buddy.
Yeah, you as well. Read Nate's work in the USA Today and online. Let's talk baseball. Our guy Toby Oltizer.
Toby
can be heard on the wonderful baseball podcast, Bustin' Loose Baseball. A new episode dropped today on the excellence of James Wood, among other things. Let's start there. Toby Wood yesterday, 4 straight intentional walks. First player to be IBB'd 4 times in a game since Barry Bonds. 6th player ever. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. Teams are starting to understand how good this guy is. I think it's partially that, partially there's not a lot of protection in the lineup for him, but you know, if I'm a team and I'm facing the Nationals, I don't know why I'd ever let number 29 have an opportunity to win the ball game against me. I'd simply take every opportunity away from him, and that's what the Angels did. The Nationals still were able to come through, but pretty remarkable to see a guy come to the plate 4 straight times and the opposing manager say, nope, you just go ahead and walk down to first base.
It took 2 out of 3 from those Angels, had a lead in all 3 games, although a slim one there on Saturday. What did we make at the end of that road trip?
Yeah, I felt like they were playing some better baseball. I mean, there were still some of the hallmarks of this team with bad base running, some poor defense, and some of the stuff that you've like to see cleaned up. But overall, the road trip, it seemed like they played better baseball, and you were playing a tough team in the Dodgers. You were playing a tough team in the Padres, only to take one of those from them. But taking 2 or 3 from the Angels, I think, was nice just to end the month of June, which was very, very bad for them, 7-19 on the month. Now you go into the month of July, hopefully hit the reset button. A tough team coming to town to start off July with the Tigers and the Red Sox for the 4th of July series. But I think it got them going in the right direction. I think what they needed was to get out of D.C. after all the losing streak and all the negativity around the team. And hopefully that West Coast road trip, being so far away from home, can maybe bring the guys together and kind of reset things for them.
Toby, another of the things we talked about on the brand new BLB, available wherever you get your audio, was Michael Soroka, the starting pitcher for the Nats, who was nails in his last seven starts. His ERA is just a hair over 4. He's got the second best stuff as far as pitching goes in the rotation behind Mackenzie Gore, and now he's dealing. My question would be, what do they do with him long term?
Yeah, I would prefer that they keep this guy, because you're not going to have to pay an exceptional amount of money, I wouldn't think. Maybe you'd have to get up to the 12 range, maybe at most $15 million a year. I think that would even be high. But even if that's the case, you get a guy that could come in here. He's shown that he's been good out of the pen. At worst, as a starter, he turns into a Trevor Williams type where he's effective for 5 innings and then comes out of the game. But I think you can still develop him more as a starter and get him back to what he once was with the Atlanta Braves. And he's looked really, really good. It's just about finishing his outings. And even if it weren't to work as a starter down the line, he's been good out of the pen, and he could end up being maybe your closer. He could be a high leverage guy. So I think he's someone that, coming up on the deadline, maybe they would move, but I would prefer, honestly, if they were to keep him around and extend him and find a way to keep him in D.C. for a couple of seasons, because I think he could be a nice piece in the middle of that rotation.
What have you seen from Brady House?
Defensively, he's awesome, Danny. I think there are some things he needs to work on at the plate. It was nice to see a nice approach the other night with a runner at second base, runner in scoring position, able to shoot one the other way, drive in a run. You know, he hasn't had the best at-bats. You haven't seen the power translate to the big league level, but I think the thing that stood out the most to me so far with him is his defense just looks so, so good. And over there, they've had such poor defensive play since Paul DeJong went down. Seems like he's going to be joining the team again, so I'm curious to see how he fits in the mix. But Brady House over at third base has been such an upgrade. He looks comfortable over there and just helps out the infield defense that, frankly, hasn't been very, very good. When you look at Luis Garcia's numbers at second base, haven't been good. C.J. Abrams has been kind of up and down typically with his defensive shortstop. I think he's been better the last couple of weeks, but still doesn't grade very well. So getting at least one guy that's going to grade favorably at a position on the infield is good to have, and they needed some help over there. I think that power is going to come as time goes on, but he looks like a big leaguer in his time up in the big league club so far.
And a multi-hit game at RBI and two of three games at the Big A against the Angels this weekend did the 22-year-old Brady House. Toby, thank you. We appreciate you.
Appreciate y'all.
Yeah, see, buddy. Be good. Busting Loose Baseball, the Nats pod that I do with Toby. Next on Grant and Danny, we're going to kick off a series that will take us up to training camp. We're going to spin the commando wheel. The commando wheel will land on a player randomly chosen by our producer, Darris Dameron, and that player will then be the topic of discussion today. We'll set up a convo. We'll take some calls on the season ahead for that commander. We spin the commando wheel next. Grant and Danny taking you up to 6:30, about 2 hours from right now today on The Fan. Coming up at 5, Ryan Wilson, CBS Eye on NFL. How about this Dolphins-Steelers trade today? Minka Fitzpatrick to Miami. Jalen Ramsey back to Pittsburgh. In fact, the deal's bigger than that. We didn't even know it initially. It sounded like it was going to be a straight-up trade between the two DBs, but it's larger than that. Jonnu Smith is actually being traded as well, who had 88 catches for the Dolphins last year. Who's going to help the Steelers' offense. There's a pick swap involved. This is as big a blockbuster late June trade as you're going to see, with two guys who were three-time All-Pros, Hall of Fame-type players, frankly.
Yeah, seriously.
So we'll talk to Wilson about that. I want to get his thoughts on Terry McLaurin as well, coming up in a little over a half hour. But speaking of the Commanders, it is time to spin the commando wheel, Danny. We're going to do this leading up to training camp. We're going to spin the wheel. We've got player options. It's going to land on a player. Darris will then let us know who it is, and that player is going to be the topic of conversation for us for the rest of the hour here. So without further ado, our first spin of the commando wheel.
In Senate.
With the 53rd pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Ben Sinnott.
Wide open downfield, Ben Sinnott. They're very high on Sinnott, and you can see why. Carrying tacklers with him. Fake it, Mariota throws it, caught by Sinnott. Touchdown! The first of his NFL career, rookie out of Kansas State.
Here's Tress Way. Oh, it's a fake. We're going to throw. He's got a man wide open, and it's caught. Sinnott, the third tight end. What a fake by Washington, and the rookie delivers for the drive continues.
Going into this year, getting a full offseason, getting my body back, knowing the offense and already having those chemistry built. So just one that's ready to get better and hopefully build a big role in this team.
Nicely put together package on Ben Sinnott by Darris, who dug deep into the archives there. He found three Ben Sinnott highlights.
Three of the four.
I mean, that
preseason catch was great.
Preseason catch, fake punt in the NFC Championship game. Darris was in his bag right there, boys and girls. Five catches for 28 yards, and you heard the touchdown for Ben Sinnott as a rookie last season. Now, it would be easy to come down on him for having a bad rookie season statistically. He got no opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is actually a good thing, probably. He was an insurance policy for Zach Ertz. I think when you bring in Ertz, who hadn't been able to stay healthy in years, you knew that if he goes down, you're going to have a problem at tight end, and it made the position still a need behind him on the depth chart, which is part of why they drafted Ben Sinnott where they did, at 53rd overall in the second round. You just heard the draft pick. But the big fella, 6'4", 247, didn't play a lot. When he did play, he mostly blocked and had just the five catches. So, Danny, let's look back first at the rookie season. How much of him not getting on the field more is about him? I mean, if he was lighting it up in practice, if he was
if you couldn't keep him off the field, you wouldn't have kept him off the field.
Clearly, he would have gotten more looks, right? Or was did he just have no chance, nothing to do with it?
So, I think he had a part in it, and it sounds like an indictment to a degree. Some of it, as you said, is the Ertz success. And, you know, John Bates being the more dedicated blocker, so it didn't leave as much of a role for him to kind of get on the field by default. But he didn't also beat the door down either here, by all accounts, right? So it could take, especially coming from a different college system and a different type offense where you're not necessarily asked to do some of these things. I've heard some smart people smarter than me, say that if you don't come from a pure pro-style system where you're asked to do almost the exact same identical things you're doing at the next level, it could take a minute for some tight ends. Now, there's some guys who are so talented, you don't care. Brock Bowers, I don't really care if you're doing the same things or not. I'm throwing you the ball 140 times, we'll figure it out, right? But for someone that's got to use his physicality, be around the line of scrimmage, you know, chip and block tight defensive ends and get on the second level to linebackers and work routes a certain way, maybe there's a learning curve there. So it's not to slam the gavel and say he'll never be good, but so far, not much return on investment from that pick to this point. And I think some of that is him. Yeah, not to say that it'll never happen, that he'll never figure it out, but you need more from that guy, and I think this is the year it needs to happen.
What percentage of offensive snaps do you think he played last year, if you had to guess?
20?
27%. A little over a quarter of snaps. More than I would have thought, honestly. 311 offensive plays he was on the field for. Now, it goes without saying that, you know, as a tight end, you're just in line a lot of the time, mm-hmm. doing some blocking. You're an extra tackle, essentially, a bunch. Because we could just look at the target share to see how often you're actually involved in the passing game. And in fact, he only had five passes thrown to him on over 300 plays, which I think also says something. I mean, I don't know how many of the 311 were passing plays, but let's just say conservatively that 225 were.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even a 311. Let's divide it by two. Let's
call it 160.
Yeah, I think that's a good number.
A little over halfway.
150, 160, something like that. If they were that many passes, only five times did Jaden Daniels throw you the ball. Like, we have a thing called, we can look that up. Like, where targets when you're on the field on pass attempts percentage, super low. That needs to be bumped up. But if you're the second tight end, a lot of the times, you might be fourth. You might be the last line of defense, so to speak, for the quarterback where he's about to get sacked and you're the guy he dumps it down to. I am still high on him, and I say that with some trepidation. I have to acknowledge that to have as uninvolved a season as he did and as ineffective a season as he did as a pass catcher, clearly there was something he was doing that wasn't good enough for them. Because I just have a hard time believing if you drafted a guy at 53, Danny, it's round two.
Yeah.
If a dude's out there at practice shaking and baking, making dudes look bad, there is no way you don't involve him. And Zach Ertz was good, really good, actually. Second half of the season, I thought he was dynamite. NFC Championship game, he dominated. He had double-digit catches. He had some really, really big games.
Yes.
But it's also not like he was the type of weapon where you can't spell him. You know, we called him No-Yak Zach for a good portion of the year because while he got open and he helped Jaden Daniels, he was kind of a catch-and-fall guy. So I guess my point is, I think this is a twofold story. If I'm doing a blame pie for Sinnott being a non-contributor in year one, I'll say 65% was probably opportunity. 35% or so was something that he wasn't doing. And maybe it should be 70, 30, 75, 25. But I still like what I saw. I'm basing almost all of this on a preseason game. Mm-hmm. On a couple catches at training camp and a catch against the Jets in the preseason where he carried dude down the field. Like four guys down the field and made a play after the catch. But I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. It's like going and scouting a high school pitcher, seeing him dot 94 on the black and rip off a breaking ball. I'll take him in the first round and I'll make pitching coaches figure the rest out. Get this guy where I need him to go as he fills out and gets stronger. I've seen Sinnott look like a beast. Now I need you to figure out how to make it happen.
To me, it's closer to 55-45 circumstances. And then the other part's him.
Meaning you blame him a little more than I do.
Yeah. And it, again, it sounds like, but suited state. I'm not doing that at all. I'm saying, like, at some point, I need you to be more of a threat than John Bates. I know Bates is on the field more than you, and we'll end up just getting looks there, but that's part of the equation. Jeremy McNichols out-targeted him 3-1 almost. You know, like, at some point, what is it you do here? Now, I'm hoping this year is that where you hit the ground running. This is the year that you've got the sea legs underneath you. You've had the apprenticeship under Zach Ertz, and you slowly but surely take over for him because there's a chance he's far more dynamic than Ertz, as we referenced the catch and fall situation. And if this goes great, you're sort of passing the baton between the vet to the kid, and Ertz still has a role for me. But Sinnott, again, is a second-round pick. I keep coming back to that. You look at their second round, not a huge return on investment yet from Johnny Newton. I think there's upside there, but still you haven't had it yet.
And he actually played enough that he could have showed more than he did.
Rotational guys.
He was okay.
Sanra still, yes, that's a win. Although, you didn't take Cooper DeJean. You didn't take Kulen McKinstry. You didn't take Roger Rosengarten, who went after Ben Sinnott. Guys that played and did really well at positions where you go, damn, they could have used that guy. So they went in on this. And Adam Peters evoked Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle when talking about what they envisioned for him. I'd love 40% of that next year.
Right.
Or 20% of that. Well, that's more than five catches.
And this was the point I was making last year every time the draft class came up, is I think the success of Jaden Daniels, which is the most important thing.
Without a doubt.
It's kind of the thing. So if you just want to give it an A and never think about it again, I'm okay with that. But I think because of how good he was, we didn't really have enough discussion about how little they got from some other really important pieces. And they, on a batting average, like, hit enough base hits. Mikey Sanra still was really good. Brandon Coleman played tackle and is going to be, I think, an outstanding guard. So this is not the Ron Rivera Marty Party ops.
No.
That's not what I'm saying. But Luke McCaffrey was a top 100 pick. Gave you nothing at receiver, basically. Ben Sinnott was picked just outside of the top 50. A team like Washington is not drafting and stashing at tight end at 52, 53, I guess he was.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Like, you need more out of him. So it's time to give him some chances. Now, as you said, the status quo remains at tight end because they brought back Ertz. They had a chance not to. They brought back Bates. They had a chance not to. Bates, they love as a blocker. The less you throw him the football, the happier I'll be. But I think it's time to involve Ben Sinnott. And if you don't, it does tell me that you're just not that high on how much he can help you. Like, it doesn't make sense in his second year to say, we got Zach Ertz, man. It's not a position like that. This is not left tackle or center or something where you don't get reps, where you don't split time, where you can't have two guys on the field, where if he's just a weapon who can win some matchups, you can't put him out in the slot every now and then and tell him to work on a linebacker or put him off the edge and throw him in a ball in the flat to rumble a little bit. Line him up. You want to call him Kyle Juszczyk? Put him in the backfield in a split eye.
Or do something. I mean, this goes back to where Washington couldn't get on board with this and couldn't quite figure this out years ago, where they had their two of their four best offensive players both happened to be tight ends, and Chris Cooley and Fred Davis. And it was like, well, we can't play two. We're sort of stuck. The hell you can't? Look at New England. Now, I know, you know, the journey and career of one went south, but when you had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez opposite each other, they were a matchup nightmare for people, right? And they figured it out that this is your best chance. If he was one of their three or four best offensive weapons, you don't think he'd hit him on the field too?
Do you have the same pause that I do just saying his name out loud?
Yeah, it's like I'm going, I had to couch this really, really carefully, even though I'm not, yeah.
It's just so weird.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, I won't even compare what it's like, but
what's
certain,
it like?
Okay. There's certain things when you say, like, names of human beings all the time, when you say them out loud, you just fill with anxiety.
Yeah, it's like,
He's one of them.
Yeah. There's a list. We can make one during the break.
I mean, there's some other Netflix documentaries, you know, like, in a row that I've watched, and it's like, there's a guy, you know, but you're right. That tight end room with Gronk and Hernandez, that wrote the book on you can make this work if you want to.
Yeah, there's no more like, okay, you're a tight end. We have a one tight end set. You will go in next play. No. Your best offensive players on the field. If it's a matchup problem, which it would be, if you had two of a tight end that could run the way it looks like he can run, I would love for you to go nickel. Oh, please go nickel. I'll knock his ass into next week. Okay, fine. Let's go base defense. I'll run right by you. Yes, that's the point of a guy like that.
We've spun the commando wheel. The player today is Ben Sinnott. We're going to open up the phones now at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Here's our Sinnott question. What is the best case for him this season? What is the worst case look like, in your opinion? Sinnott, year two, Grant and Danny on the Fan. We spun the commando wheel. It came up Ben Sinnott today. That is the commander we're talking about. Phones are open at 800-636-1067. Question for you, best case, worst case. I think best case for Ben Sinnott individually, and I hate to say this, it means Zach Ertz is unavailable for a major stretch. He becomes the primary tight end, and I think he shows that he can do the Ertz thing. He's not going to be the same player in terms of acumen and smarts and getting open and reading zones and, you know, maybe being the perfect safety blanket for Jaden Daniels. But maybe he makes up for some of that with the after-the-catch ability to rumble, to break a tackle, to do some things with elusiveness, Cooley-esque, in the open field with body lean and, you know, balance and leverage and some of the stuff that he's got with his big 6'4 frame. But I think the best case is he starts half the season or more because Ertz reverts to being unavailable like he was at one point. I'm not saying that's what's best for the team, but he turns into a Ertzian, like 5-6 catch a week, 50-60 yard kind of guy, and goes out and puts up 600 yards or something, you know, starting 12 games and playing in 17 games. I think that's very possible. As I said, I think the majority of his issue was just opportunity. He made some athletic plays when given the chance. Worst case is what we just saw.
Yep.
And he's not going to catch five balls again. I mean, there's no way that happens, short of him not being healthy. But worst case would be Ertz plays all 17, Bates plays all 17. You got to get in where you fit in. You got a quarterback who pulls the ball down and runs on passing plays a lot. So there's just fewer balls to go around for receivers like Sinnott. And you catch 17 balls or 14 balls. And we're 2 years into a second-round pick, and we're going, is this guy a third tight end? Can this guy do a lot more than that? To me, that's best and worst.
Yeah, there's just over 500 targets to go around over the course of a season. Most teams would be in the 600 range. Washington was 500 because the amount of runs in general, plus the quarterback runs, both the guys that they employ are quarterback runners as well. I don't know where the targets are coming from. So I've got a lower, similar floor. I think it's he doesn't get many chances and doesn't, you know, burst his way onto the field. Ceiling-wise, I don't know that we get past kind of what Dyami Brown did last year, 30 catches, you know, a few hundred yards.
Let's go to JB in Waldorf to get started on Grant and Danny. What's up, JB?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing today, man?
Hey, buddy.
Doing well.
All right, all right. Like I was telling Darius, man, I think two things, if I can. I think the lack of success that he had last year was more so on Kingsbury and not scheming him up. I think once he saw things going good with Ertz, he just wanted to ride that horse and keep riding that horse and keep riding that horse. Because if you notice, like, McLaurin didn't even eat until almost like week five or six, really. So it was things about Kingsbury and the offense and things of that nature. But best case scenario for Sinnott, I think a 40 to 45 catch season, somewhere around 425, 450 yards, something like that.
But do you think he can do that if Ertz stays healthy? Because that's really bullish, I think, if Ertz is on the field.
I think they can do it if they make Ertz a third down tight end. For, like, where they need him, like, where he need, you know what I'm saying, where he needs to get the first
sure.
down. Because
the only thing, though, JB, and thanks for the call, buddy, because we got a bunch we're going to mow through here. He's a pretty good blocker. I mean, Zach Ertz is an all-down guy when he's healthy. I don't want to limit him. There was nothing he really did last year that would suggest that. Maybe JB's point is this is the way to keep him healthy, though, is even though he could help you on first and second, have him out there on the obvious.
Yeah, I'd lower the snap count a little bit just by nature.
I think that's a good point.
Right.
That's probably a good critique. Let's go to Nathan in Centerville. What's up, Nate?
Hey, what's up, guys? No, I'm with you, Grant. I think that Sinnott can show with, unfortunately, you know, Ertz missing an extended period of time or Bates missing time or a combination. But I think the ceiling for him is showing that when they move on from Ertz or he hangs it up or whatever it is, that you kind of don't have to scramble and panic and say, where's our tight end one going to be next year, even if he's not this elite guy. I think the floor, though, is we're talking about Peters' first miss in the draft and something that we kind of just all, you know, the skill set's there, the toolbox is there, and just never really panned out.
Appreciate you, dude. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you just go, oh, well, I never had the opportunity. But, like, if it was in their best interest to have that guy on the field more, he'd be on the field more. You know, it's very rare that someone that you drafted in your building that you like, that you had eyes on, that you are now getting a chance to work with, I mean, how many lives did Dalmy Brown get? You know what I mean? There's enough guys where you just keep giving them chances. And if he can't crack the field over an aging Zach Ertz and, you know, John Bates, who has Jahidi White hands, it tells you a lot, I think.
Let's go to Jack, who's in Arlington on GND. Hey, Jack.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, so big highlight for me last season for him. I mean, we've seen so many drop passes. He didn't drop a single thing. He doesn't have these stone hands like Dotson and a couple other people we've put out there and asked them to catch the ball. I think upside, this guy's got a gold jacket written all over him. We can line him up in the back and get him to tote the rock. I mean, him and Debo in the backfield, I think that there's a lot of fun stuff that Cliff can do.
He's doing bits, right? He went from Hall of Famer
feels like bits
to asking Ben Sinnott to run the football. And maybe he's being serious.
Maybe you do that.
It feels like he's in a car with a couple of his buddies, and now they're listening to see what we say. And if that's what's happening, this is what we're going to say.
You could do the Logan Thomas bit. Maybe have him take a snap and get a fourth and one. Maybe.
At gold jacket is kind of where I assume there's a bit here.
He could probably buy a jacket made of, you know, that's golden colored. But
do they have gold jackets at Big Lots?
Yeah, like at Men's Warehouse, you get a gold one.
Do they sell gold jackets?
I'm sure they do. You can find one.
Let's go to Paul in D.C. What's up, Paul?
I agree with both of you guys, but I also agree with the first caller. I think that was more Cliff Kingsbury because it was several situations where I felt like he wasn't utilizing the totality of his talent, even in the running back field. I was saying why you couldn't put Brian Robinson back there with Eckler sometimes. Just to confuse the defense a little bit. They both can catch out the backfield. One might be better than the other, but you can utilize them. I feel the same way with Ertz and Sinnott. There's so many times I just felt like Cliff Kingsbury wanted to throw the ball to four and five wide receiver sets, and he just didn't give the young man an opportunity. Joe Gibbs had Donnie Warren, and Clint Diddy have found the perfect way to use both of those guys.
Yeah, well, that's a great point on Cliff in this sense. Someone said earlier, he likes Ertz, no doubt. I mean, remember, he had Ertz in Arizona and then brought him to Washington. Like, he is a Zach Ertz mark. There is no doubt about that. So that's a big thing. But also, he likes spread. It's the air raid. Or now it's kind of the horizontal.
The horizontal.
Raid. But this is a spread. This is three receivers, four receivers sometimes spread out. I'm just saying you could have a plus-size receiver and have Ben Sinnott be that guy occasionally. Vic and Akakeek, be quick, but you get the last word. Go ahead.
I like you. Last word. You can John Cusack him, 49er risk. You can use Ben in the backfield. You can use Ben in the backfield to motion on some tight end screens. You can motion him across the motion him to get it in the middle of the field for a big target. And you can use him to block for our running backs. We got some speed in the backfield this year, but he's talented. Get him on the field.
Yeah, you got a plan.
Appreciate
and
you.
And if that's what the caller who we were questioning his seriousness was suggesting, just playing an H-back, meaning have him play like a fullback. But he was talking about handing him the football, which I don't think was
He said toting the rock.
That was the phrase. Now, Kyle Juszczyk gets the occasional carry. It's like once every couple of months on the
goal line. Mike Sellers would when nobody sees it coming.
Exactly. Ryan Wilson, Eye on NFL for CBS Sports. We got to get to the bottom of the Steelers-Dolphins blockbuster trade today. And what does he think? A little national perspective on what's going on with Terry McLaurin. That's next on Grant and Danny.